Welcome along to the Care Team Sessions podcast. This is a podcast of talks from our monthly CPD events. For those that aren't already familiar with us, the West Midlands Care Team is a charity pre-hospital enhanced care team operating in the Birmingham area for over 30 years now. Care Team Sessions CPD events have something for all clinical levels, from community responders right through to experienced in-hospital clinicians, along with medics from other services like police and fire. We want to share the team's knowledge and experience with you, so Care Team Sessions is free to attend or to listen back to on this podcast. It's also an opportunity to raise money for the charity, which would help us to continue to do the work we do. If you'd like a CPD certificate for listening to this podcast, we ask for a donation of £5. Details of how to donate and claim your certificate are in the podcast description. Also, don't forget to follow us on social media. Search at WM Care Team. Enjoy the podcast.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks all for coming. It's nice to see a few familiar faces. For those of you that don't know me, I do work for West Mids. I'm a clinical safeguarding officer, so I work in the safeguarding team at the moment. The reason I'm here is that I've got a bit of a unique perspective. So I'm a dual qualified midwife and paramedic. So I've been a midwife for 20 years and I've been a paramedic for just over 13. So I've done lots of stuff in all areas of midwifery practice, in lots and lots of different areas. I still do practice clinically as a midwife as well, as well as occasionally like scaring myself out on a vehicle every now and again. I do a lot of work nationally as well. So I am the maternity rep for the College of Paramedics. So I sit on JL Calc and AACE for the college. The new JL Calc breech birth guidelines, I was the chair of that update group. So the new guidelines, I hope you've all been on and read them. Please go on and refresh yourselves and have a look. It's taken us 18 months to get those guidelines out and done. I wasn't going to do a set topic tonight because I always find that it sort of limits us as to one area. So we're going to run this as sort of a Q&A session. So hopefully there's some either pre-planned questions, or if you guys have got some questions and anyone wants to throw anything out. Has anyone got anything to kick us off? Or have I got to bore you with something that I like talking about? Breech birth, my favourite topic, yes. Okay.
But they just really fascinate me. But
absolutely.
A lot of women who have breech births end up going for a C-section.
Yeah, unfortunately, back in... It is, yeah. unfortunately, back in the year 2000, which was not that long ago, even though it's probably before some of you guys were even born, which I don't like to think about at the moment. There was a trial published called the Hannah Trial, and the Hannah Trial literally changed obstetric practice overnight. And the Hannah Trial came out and it said to all obstetricians, vaginal breech birth is dangerous, you should not do it. And overnight, obstetricians, so when they were counselling women whose babies were presenting at 36 weeks in the breech presentation, went, this trial, which is evidence-based, it's a randomised controlled trial, tells us that it's dangerous and you should not have your baby vaginally, so we'll book you for a C-section next week. So literally overnight, that changed practice. So we now have a huge generational knowledge gap where we've got midwives, obstetricians, who have never ever witnessed a vaginal breech birth. They didn't ever get to practice their skills in doing it, so they became skill decayed, the skill faded. We don't have a choice. As pre-hospital clinicians, if that bum is hanging out, you're stuck. So there are more paramedics out there that have caught vaginal breaches than a lot of midwives at the moment. I'm very lucky. I work for a trust where we didn't do cesarean sections and vaginal breaches happened all the time. And I've actually caught 8 breech babies myself over my 20-year career, which is very, very unusual for a midwife. So I'm very experienced in breech birth compared to a lot of people. I've probably caught more breech babies than most doctors have, which is, you know, which is really, really shocking. So from the point of the breech birth then, oh, no, not that one. You really didn't want to see that one at that point, did you? That's the wrong space picture. So when we first have an inkling that we've got a breech birth, that might be the first indicator that you get. because actually a breech will progress exactly the same as a cephalic birth. Or the other thing that you might see is a big string of black toothpaste. And that black toothpaste is your meconium, okay? So as the baby presents and as the baby is coming down in the pelvis, its pelvis gets squeezed, and sometimes the first thing that you actually see is that stringy like meconium that's coming out of its anus, okay? That's completely normal. We're not panicked about that type of meconium because that is purely that squeezing motion. So do not panic about that type of meconium. Generally, you'll see extremely swollen genitalia, and you'll see the right bum cheek that comes down first, and that's just because of the shape of the pelvis. So don't be alarmed. They'll come down in this transverse position, and as the mum comes through and you see that presenting part coming through, the presenting part will come backwards and forwards exactly the same as in a cephalic presentation, okay? So you'll get that backwards and forwards, that physiological backwards and forwards that will happen because you've got that stretching of the pelvic floor, okay? Then you'll get to a point where the widest part of the hips are coming through, okay? And this is what's known as the rumping, okay? So as we've got the crowning, as the head's coming through, yeah? As the widest part of the hips come through, that's known as the rumping. And that's your point of no return. Now, this is where the guidelines have changed quite significantly, and we've got some really, really in-depth, helpful guidance in this bit now. Because as you can see from the previous guideline, which looked a little bit like, gone too far. So the previous guideline looked something like this, didn't it? Absolutely chuff all use to you, absolutely. So you'd be pleased to know that the new guideline looks like this. Okay, very detailed, very in depth, and step by step. So we'll go through it stage by stage, okay? First thing you're gonna do when you walk in, recognize, is it there? Is it a breech? Okay, what can you see? Can you see genitalia? Can you see that frank meconium? What you then need to determine is if your birth is imminent or if your birth is not imminent. And that's the same with any single maternity case you go to, isn't it? What you're looking for, have I got to get my gloves on or have I got time to get to hospital? That is it. That's all you're looking for, okay? If your birth is imminent, regardless of whether it's cephalic or breech, you're staying there and you are catching that baby, okay? So what are our signs of birth imminent then? What are we looking for our signs of birth imminent?
Urge to push.
Yeah, absolutely. If she tells you, if that person that is birthing, that woman tells you, I want to push, I feel like I want to have my bowels open, I feel pressure, I feel like it's coming, that baby is coming. She's not going to lie to you, okay? There is enough obstetric violence as it is without us going, no, it's not happening. If she tells you it's coming, trust me. She cannot fake that feeling, okay? Yeah, and have you got another one? Sorry? How do you know she's fully dilated? Yeah. Anyone seen that scene in Gavin and Stacey? I love that bit where Uncle Bryn goes, oh, it's about four, I think. Anyway, we digress. The cervix is of no relevance to us. It makes no difference. That's why we don't talk about stages of labour, because we just don't know. All we know is imminent or not imminent. That's all we're bothered about. A cervix is completely irrelevant, okay? But you will know if a birth is imminent and her cervix therefore is dilated by looking at your signs of birth imminent, okay? Yes, hon. The rhombus of Mercades.
At the bottom of their back.
Yep, so at the base of the sacrum, you might see what's known as the rhombus of Mercades, which is a pressure marking. As that baby's head or buttocks push against the base of the sacrum, you'll see this nice sort of like, rhomboid-shaped object appear at the base of the sacrum. Doesn't happen in every single woman, but that is a real good indicator. The other thing you might see is the purple line, which is another one. Is that what you were going to say? No, so the purple line is something a little bit different. So the purple line is like a pressure marking that happens from, excuse me while I go back 200 slides, one second. So the purple line is a pressure marking that goes from the anal margins to the natal cleft. And this is a really, really old midwife trick. And you can see it's just happening just here. So when the line reaches the top of the natal cleft, she is said to be fully dilated, or 10 centimetres. But again, that doesn't make any difference to us whatsoever. If you Google the purple line, it'll bring you up the evidence paper behind it. It's present on around about 79% of women. You'll see that on, and it doesn't matter what ethnicity she is either. The line just goes a different colour depending on what her skin tone is. Okay, but those are really, really good sort of non-invasive ways of knowing. So the rhombus of Mercalli's and the purple line are a really excellent tool for you to see what is happening, what is going on. Some of the other things then that you'll look at, so the first and the most common thing that we see, you've talked about the feel, the urge to push and all the rest of it, the expulsive contractions. Those are one of the first things that you'll notice if this baby is about to be born. The expulsive contractions happen because of a reflex release, an extra large reflex release of oxytocin, known as Ferguson's reflex. And Ferguson's reflex is triggered as the presenting part pushes down on the pelvic floor. So as you get this pushing down on the pelvic floor, you get an extra oomph of oxytocin, which causes these massively large expulsive contractions, okay? This is when you get that instinctive pushing, you get that autonomic bearing down. She cannot help herself from pushing at that point, okay? Because it's a natural reflex, that natural reaction of the oxytocin burst. She starts to sort of, she may change her behaviour slightly, she may become slightly more uncooperative, you tend to get a little more fruity language come out at this point. Anyone that says, well, isn't that just women in general, gets chicked out now, you know. But yeah, if you're at this point now, this is what we know to be transition, this is what we call the transitional point, because the woman is transitioning into this birthing phase, this is the birth becoming imminent. What you'll see externally wise then, doesn't matter. Either of these will happen, whether it's head down or bum down, doesn't matter. So your perineum will start to bulge, you'll start to see this bulging perineum, anal dilatation. You might also get passage of fecal matter at this point. It's really important that you don't go messing with any fecal matter that's around and about, okay? You don't go wiping a woman's bottom. What's the instinctive reaction if someone strokes something against your anus? Yeah, we definitely do not want any clenching at this point, okay? So there is to be no clenching. We don't acknowledge it. It's cleared away, it's put in a yellow bag. That's why there's a yellow bag in your mati pack and it's just swept away. We don't talk about poop in labour. You might see the presenting part. We've talked about the purple line. And this is the point as well now, at this point where the water should technically break. Sometimes they will have broken previously, but this physiologically is the point at which the water should break. Ideally, just before the baby comes out so that everything is cleaned and there's that minimal exposure to infection. It also acts as that nice cushion, that nice pressure cushion against the baby, so they're not exposed to obviously greater amounts of pressure from the contractions during the labour. But physiologically, that's when they should break. If they don't panic, doesn't matter. There's more paramedics out there and pre-hospital clinicians out there that have caught babies on call or in the call or in the sac than midwives. Most midwives have never even seen a baby come out in the call because waters tend to get broken very, very early on. It's one of the most common medicalized interventions that there is, unfortunately. And the evidence says there is actually no benefit to breaking waters whatsoever. So them going around saying it speeds things up, it doesn't. If you read the Cochrane Review, it tells you very clearly that it doesn't. So with this breach then. So if your birth is imminent, we are not going to try and move this woman at this point. If she is about to give birth, you do not, it doesn't matter whether it's head down or bum down, you get everything ready and you prepare for your birth. First thing that you need to do, obviously, is request your additional resources. I would not, categorically not, be phoning a maternity unit at this point. Okay, why do we not want to phone a maternity unit at this point? Yeah, you struggled to get them to answer the phone. Sorry, I do apologise. You don't know who's going to answer the phone if they do answer the phone. Not all units have got red phones now. And also, what guidance do hospitals and maternity staff work to? Hospital guidelines. Have they ever heard of JR Calc? Had you? Oh, it's different to ask you. But have you ever heard of JR Calc before tonight?
No.
Have most midwives and obstetricians ever seen a breech birth happen? So what's their instinctive reaction, and has been their instinctive reaction to several times to our clinicians phoning up and asking for help? Bring them in. Put them on. Just get them gone. Absolutely. Phone for help, phone for support, but phone the right people for support. Don't be phoning the hospitals. Phone our methods of support, okay? First and most important thing that you need to do is prepare for your newborn life support, okay? You don't need a maternity pack. There is nothing in a maternity pack that is going to help you catch a baby. All you need is ideally a pair of gloves, okay? Does help. I've caught them without and it's not fun, trust me. All you need is two towels and a BVM. That's it. Realistically, that is all I want. Two towels and a BVM. Ideally, a few more than two towels, but two towels is your minimum, okay? And then we want the woman to get into a position to assist gravity, okay? So we do not want this woman lay on her back. This is the absolute key here. We do not want her in this position. Now, this is not the position to give birth in anyway. No woman should be subjected to giving birth in this position. A woman ideally should only ever give birth in this position, okay? This is the recommended position, so being upright, all fours, or if they want to be in a semi-recumbent position, they're in an upright position and they're sat down, okay? My advice to you, and this is my absolute recommendation, is get them in all fours. This is really important, because what you've got in this position is physiologically the best position for them to be in. You can see exactly what's happening. You can see the progress. You can see the processes that are happening and what's going on. But also you've got gravity. Gravity is helping you. So it doesn't matter whether the baby is cephalic or breech, get them into all fours. Physiologically, it is the best position for her to be in. If your birth is not imminent, okay, or if you can see just a foot presenting, okay? Now, if you've got just a foot and nothing else, you get on and get gone, okay? Because how far, and I hate to talk about cervixes, but how far dilated has a cervix got to be for a foot to slip out? Not very, absolutely. Is a head going to come out of a 2 or 3 centimetre dilated cervix? No, but you can potentially get a foot out. So if you just have a foot on and gone, okay? If you have a foot, a leg and a buttock, an urge to push and expulsive contractions, that is birth imminent, okay? So there's a big difference between just seeing feet and seeing feet and buttocks. Does that make sense? Just a foot, on and gone. Feet, legs, buttocks, urge to push. Imminent, crack on with your birth, okay? So rapid transport, where are we gonna go? Where are we, what's our destination? So it's not necessarily gonna be their booked maternity unit, it was going to be the nearest maternity unit, okay? Because let's face it, a lot of women in Birmingham book for units that are further away from where they actually live. So this is classed as an obstetric emergency, and therefore you are allowed, and they cannot refuse you at the nearest obstetric unit. You want to be going to maternity. Ideally, you don't want to be going to ED with this, because obviously you want a skilled obstetrician in order to try and handle this birth. I could probably guess that the ED consultants that are sat here, ED docs stand here going, nope, definitely, we don't want that. Definitely not, definitely not. So while you're en route, obviously you want to continually observe for your signs imminent. You must only convey in that semi-recumbent position with her strapped in, okay? She cannot be conveyed in all fours. That's really important. You cannot convey her in an all fours position. She must be secured in the vehicle, okay? Really, really important. Obviously, if birth progresses en route, stop and assist with the birth. So what are we gonna do then? The guideline has been split now so that you've got pictures and diagrams. I believe that actually in the guideline you haven't got these pictures. I think it's actually the photographs. I prefer these pictures though, so you know, It's split into either side, so you've got all fours on the one side and then you've got semi-recumbent on the other. So you can clearly see, it doesn't matter what position your woman is in, you can see what should be happening, okay? Down the side, it's similar to the NLS algorithm. It's constantly asking you, are you seeing progress? Do you need help? Are you seeing progress? Because we want to see progress every single step. And if this birth is not progressing, we're going to have a very low threshold to say, this isn't working, we're going. Okay, and we'll talk a bit about that in a second. We're not touching this baby, not touching at all. Okay, we're just allowing her to keep going and push and progress as we're going on. So what you'll see then, as you'll see this birth progressing, as the rumping happens and both buttocks come out, you'll see the buttocks are in the, that way. God, it's been a long week and it's gonna get even longer. Vertical. They're gonna be in the vertical position, okay? You've got the anal crease going across, so you've got the buttock crease going horizontal, okay? We're watching, we're observing, we're seeing what's happening. At this point, she's just pushing with her contractions. But once you get to the point of rumping, where you don't have that backwards and forwards, okay, we're going to start a timer. Now, this is where your situational awareness has to come in, okay, and your crew resource management has to step in, and someone needs to take over overall scene command of this, because you need to start a timer and you've got 5 minutes to get this baby out. That's it. And if this baby is not out by 5 minutes, you're getting on and you're getting gone. Now, in hospital, it's slightly different. And if you look at the fantastic algorithm that Sean Walker's put together, which if I put up for this lot, they would go, what the hell? But I would highly recommend you go on the Breech Birth Network and look at Sean's algorithm for in hospital management. So we want to continuously push at this point, okay? So because we're on this timer, we are encouraging her to push continuously, okay? So she's pushing continuously, we're not waiting for contractions. And what will happen as she pushes is that you will see the baby start to rotate, okay? So the baby will work its way out and the baby will rotate beautifully through the curve of the pelvis for you. And you can see now that the baby will come out and in the Frank Breech position, which is what about 70% of babies will present in, you get those legs nicely up against its chest, okay? So at this point now, we've got this baby that's emerging, we've got a beautiful colour of the baby. Baby's really nicely well perfused. We've got a nice full and bounding cord, but we're not going to touch the cord, we're going to leave it well alone. We can see that the baby's starting to move itself. So we know that we've also got a baby that's neurologically intact because it's moving itself. Now, not all babies will, and some more preterm babies might not move, but babies should ideally start to move themselves and they'll start to kick their own legs out. Now, this is the beauty again of being in the all fours position, is that you can see that happening. And if you need to intervene, the legs are just there for you to do it. And we'll go over the interventions in a second. So those legs will spontaneously come out and birth themselves. Okay, so the baby comes out at that point and it will do it all itself. You don't have to touch it. And it's really, really important that you don't. It's the hardest thing in the world, trust me, to sit there, literally sat on your hands going, I cannot touch it, I cannot touch it. It's everyone's temptation to put their hands underneath and hold that baby up. What is that preventing? Gravity. We need that baby's head now to descend down into the pelvis. So what it's really, really important that we do is not to assist that baby and not to hold it up. The other thing that you can potentially do at that point by holding the baby is to stimulate the baby, and we don't want that baby attempting to take a gasp while that head's in utero. The reason that it's limited to 5 minutes is obviously to prevent that hypoxia, prevent that gasping, but also as well, this baby's wet. and exposed. We want to limit the effects of hypothermia on this baby because this baby is very, very much at risk of becoming extremely cold at this point. Okay, so that is another reason why we limit it to 5 minutes. So at this point, the baby may potentially do something a little bit freaky as well. And with a baby that is very neurologically intact and very in good condition, is that they should ideally do what's known as the abdominal crunches and do these stomach crunches. Okay, as they lift their legs up like this, you can see that the arms are starting to come into position. So again, this is another reason why we need to be hands off. And by being in all fours, you'll see the wonder of this happening. It is absolutely magical, I tell you. You don't believe me, I know, but it is, trust me. So as the baby does this, it lifts both legs up and does this lovely like crunch here. And it's another reflex. It's a reflex you can actually initiate in a baby afterwards by stroking their side. It's one of their inbuilt neurological reflexes. So as it does that, then those arms should come down and physiologically come through the pelvis themselves. So it does that lovely, what we call like this prayer hands technique as it comes down, okay? And those both arms should spontaneously come through together. So again, we can see we've got a baby that is coming, it's progressing well, it's really lovely and perfused, it's moving, so we know it's neurologically intact, the progress is happening, everything is happening as it should. We've not touched the baby, it's progressing, we're within our 5 minutes, we're absolutely fine. So at this point now, it will do another little crunch. And as it does this other little crunch, it kind of brings its head down into position as well. So what it's trying to do at this point is to sort of crunch its head through, okay? So you get to this point here, and if you get to the chin, if you can see the chin, you're absolutely home and dry. That's it, this baby's out. At this point now, you want to have your hands here, okay? Definitely not here. Let the woman do exactly what she wants to do. In a woman that's having a spontaneous, unmedicated birth, physiologically, she will get into what position she needs to. There is some fabulous videos. I'm going to try and attempt to show you one of them. But there's one video that I've seen from, I can't remember whether it was Breech Birth Network or Breech Without Borders now, but she gets herself into this position where she's got her leg, like literally sort of cocked up on a chair and round and squatted down like this. But it's because her baby had got its arm round like this. So physiologically, she knew instinctively she had to get into this position and the baby fell out. So women will do it spontaneously. You do not have to tell them. You do not have to instruct them. So at this point now, this baby should just plop out. This was at this birth. So this is little Silas. Silas was born in 3.5 minutes and weighs 8.5 pounds. So as you can see, he's a nice big chunky baby, okay? He's a little bit shell-shocked, and this is very, very often what happens in babies that come out extremely rapidly. So he's a really good colour. We can see he's got good tone, he's got good movement. He's attempting to try and take a breath out at this point. And it's a very common manoeuvre for babies to do at this point, whether they come out cephalic or breech. But babies that are born very, very rapidly, there's two things that you will notice. They will be extremely bruised around the face. So they will have a lot of bruising and a lot of swelling. And they also tend to come out and go, what the hell's happened to me? And they're a bit like, I don't really know what's happened. They haven't had that time to have that physiological squeeze, and they haven't had that time to empty all of that lovely lung fluid out. So very often these babies need a good bit of rubbing and stimulating to get them going. Sometimes they will even need a couple of inflation breaths just to clear a little bit more of that fluid and just to get things moving. Do not clamp and cut the cord. Okay, it's really, really important that we do our initial resuscitation with the cord intact, if it is logistically possible. Okay, ideally, the European guidelines say that we should not be clamping and cutting the cord until we've got adequate lung aeration. Now, obviously, if you're stuck down the back of a toilet cubicle at 3 a.m. with no light bulb, okay, after 60 seconds, you can clamp and cut to take them out. But ideally, if it is logistically possible, we don't want to be clamping and cutting until that aeration has happened and you're confident that you've got good rise and fall of the chest. because that volume is more important. Okay, that there's lots and lots of evidence out there about the placenta self-resuscitating babies. And if you look at some of the unassisted free birthing videos where there's no healthcare professionals present, then you can see very, very clear evidence of self-resuscitation of babies by their placentas. There's some really, really interesting videos out there. So there we go. So we've got to that point. So we'll just go through the guidelines so that you can see it in the guideline picture. So if you have delay of the legs, okay, so you're going to put pressure behind the popliteal fossas. So pressure behind the back of the knees just to release those legs, okay, if there's no progress and you don't get progress adequately coming, okay. So if it is progressing and if it is normally progressing, you do not intervene, okay. So you would not intervene unless you have delay, okay. If you've got delay with the arms, now, previously, it's been very, very, we're not allowed to do that, we're not allowed to do this, you can't do this, you can't do that. It is written down here in black and white that you place your finger into the axilla, into the vagina, and you pull the arm down, okay? So it is written in black and white. There is no guesswork that you had to do with the other one. This was written in the other one, but it wasn't written in black and white. So there was no, everyone was scared to stay. Put your finger in the vagina and just pull it out or it's not going to come out. It's written down now, so it's all there for you, okay? So once you can see the arms then, if you can't see the arms, if you can't see the axilla, you have to rotate the baby into a position where you can release the arms, okay? So to do that, you would take the baby by holding its pelvis and its pelvis only. Why do we not want to grab it around its abdomen? Yeah, squish all its internal organs, can't you? All its intestines, spleen, liver, everything is all exposed in the baby. So you would only ever use its hard, bony pelvis to grab hold of it. And you would rotate it 90 degrees, okay? By rotating it 90 degrees, you can now see its axilla, okay? So you take your finger into the axilla, you feel down the humerus to find it the inside of its elbow, so its antecubical fossa, axilla, humerus, ACF, sweep. Then you rotate the baby back to this nice tum to bum position. So it's always tum to bum. So it doesn't matter whether she's semi-recumbent or she's in all fours. You always want to be tum to bum, okay? And then if the other arm hasn't spontaneously come out by itself, you would then rotate it 90 degrees again. And if the arm doesn't rotate out spontaneously by itself, you again take your finger into its axilla, down the humerus, ACF, sweep out, okay? And then you rotate the baby back, tum to bum, and wait for the head. Now you would encourage her to push again, okay? So you don't encourage her to push while you're twisting. You would only encourage her to push once you've finished, okay? Once you can see then the baby's chin, next slide. Okay, if the head is delayed, so if you have delay and she's in all fours, you are going to do a procedure known as a shoulder press, okay, which is very simply where you either place both hands, okay, against the baby's chest. I can't do this with I've got a stand and I didn't bring the stand because I thought it'd be too big, but we should have bought the stand now. Two fingers like this and push the baby backwards. Okay, so effectively you're just pushing the baby back, and as you're doing that, okay, what happens is you're rotating the baby through the pelvis, so you're just pivoting the baby through the pelvis. Okay, I normally do the pivot joke there, but I don't think the audience is old enough to get the pivot joke. So you would literally just sweep that face through the pelvis. Now this is why it's easier for her to be in all fours at this point, okay? Because if she is in a semi-recumbent position, you now have to do a procedure which is effectively known as the Morisot Smelly Vite Maneuver, okay? So those people in the room will remember this from obstetric training. It brings fear into everybody's hearts, okay? So the Morisot Smelly Vite Maneuver has to happen when a woman is in this semi-recumbent position, because as you can see in this position, that head physiologically will not come out of that pelvis. Hence why I say get her into all fours, because physiologically that head will come through that pelvis, okay? In semi-recumbent, this won't. You can see you've got the chin that's stuck on the coccyx, so it physically will not come out of that pelvis, okay? So you now have to maneuver this baby. Could I ask you just to hold that for me? Sorry, I can't do this with just one hand. So you have to place two fingers through the baby into the vagina onto the baby's cheekbones, okay? You then place the other hand on top, to on the shoulder and on the occiput, and you're creating a nice little baby sandwich. You're creating pressure on that occiput to keep flexion on the head, because you need to keep the head flexed as you pivot the baby through the pelvis, okay? If you haven't got that flexion, you're not going to have a narrow enough gap to get it out. So now you've got your nice little baby sandwich here. You get down, have to crouch down on the floor like this. You then have to pivot the baby up and over and out. All fours is easier? Yeah? Absolutely, all the way. You have to do that maneuver with a woman in a semi-recumbent position, because physiologically, that baby just will not come out that way, okay? This is a very medicalized way of doing a breech birth. And most of you guys who are doctors will probably have been shown this way with sticking forceps on. And that was because that was the way that obstetricians were taught how to do breech birth, but to apply forceps to the aftercoming head. Because most obstetricians, when you say, I want her in all fours, will go, oh no, we don't do things like that. Don't. Obstetricians don't like that. We try and change things. Hence why it took 18 months for this guideline to come out. So all of this was in the old guideline, believe it or not. But in the old guideline, it just said, support the head as it births. That was the guidance you got. Hence why I was getting SIs left, right and centre about breech births. So I'm hoping now that those SIs will go down. So this guideline is now 100% live in your PowerPass. There is also, in the full guideline, there is also access to some clips and some videos as well that you can watch, ideally on your way to the job, not while you're in the house. But what I would recommend is while you are in the house, get the algorithm out and go through it. Have somebody doing that check to say, you know, what's happening, you know, what can I see, what can I not see. Let me see if I can get this, this website here, is this going to work? Breech Without Borders, fantastic resource, run by a wonderful obstetrician called Rixa Fries. And there is a couple of videos that I would just like to see if they will work. I'm not sure if these are going, yeah. So Prime, obviously, is a first-time mum, okay? So you can see here, she's standing up. She's standing up in this position. You can clearly see she is in the second stage of labour, okay? You can clearly see we've got somebody who is about to give birth. You can see that nice rhombus of Mercedes in her as well, which is really, really handy. So we can see the presenting part. That's her anus. That's not the presenting part. Just that's the presenting part is this bit round here. So we've got the rumping happening just about there. So that's, you can see now you've got the clock on for the rumping. So you can see that the baby is coming down in a really nice position. So don't be tempted to mess. Don't touch at this point. So we can see we've got good progress. This is a first time mum. This is a first baby. You can see the progress. There we go. We've got the nice little movements there from baby. Hands out, getting ready to catch. There we go. So 30 seconds before the baby cries. Yeah. So they've slowed it down here. So you've got your slow motion. So you can see you've got legs. This baby's not in a particularly fabulous condition, I must admit. You can see that there's quite a lot of meconium in those waters.
So you can tell that this baby's a little bit on the stressed out side, hence why it didn't come out and scream. And then you've just got the whole birth progressing. So she was 39 weeks, this lady. So now you see 2 minutes and that baby's nicely perked up. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. So there's another one here. So this lady, this lady's actually a midwife in somewhere in America. So it's her, yeah, so she's got 12 babies already. I know. Yeah. This is actually her midwifery office. So she didn't really want to be. Yeah, she said she didn't really want to be in her office, but she said it just was where I took it, because she's actually a midwife in America, who's actually a trained breech birth midwife anyway. So there you can see you've got that nice progressing, but you can see even though she's in a semi-recumbent position, she's fully upright. You can see she's in a really upright position. It's got no sound, unfortunately, but her son's the funniest because her son's actually videoing it. So even though this is this lady's 12th baby, you can see it doesn't actually just come flying out. And one of the longest labours that I actually looked after somebody on was somebody having her 9th baby. And she was labouring all day, and it didn't actually happen as quickly as she thought it was going to. So she's not continually pushing in this one, but you can see when she does push, you get really, really nice progress. Very nice silky robe she's got on as well, which makes me smile. So you can see the first leg is released now. That's the first leg that's come down. So we've still got tum to bum. So we've got obviously baby's bum to mum's tum at this point. And you can't see the second leg. And that's, again, this is a big disadvantage of being in this semi-recumbent position, is you can't actually see what's going on. But you can see that the arms and shoulders have released now. We haven't got much crunching of this baby. That she's going to lift down. So she's just released, and now she's going to pick the baby up and pivot him round in a sec. And she's going to wait for him to plop out. No, there we go. There we go. Super. But she instinctively, there's a fab video on YouTube of a woman who's birthing in a doorway, and she instinctively bends down and catches the baby. It's absolutely incredible. Again, you can see the baby's a little bit shell-shocked, doing that typical, like, what the heck's going on here sort of position. So this is a really good example of a normal baby at birth as well, because obviously a lot of people here are sort of going, oh my god, why is this not happening? So she's giving it a bit of a stimulate. I'm a bit sort of worried about why there's no towel and why she's put on a wet inco. That would be my first thing, would be to get it off the wet inco sheet. Don't try and suction it out. That's a very, very American thing. Do not suction babies. They do not need any suctioning. One of the worst things you can do is stick a suction catheter into a baby's mouth, because you can cause vagal nerve stimulation, which will knock off their respirators even further. So we do not suction a baby at all. So you can see she's going to do a little bit of inflation breaths. So this has been, what's this, 1:10 now. So she's not clamped and cut the cord. You can see the cord is still pulsating at this point. Baby's a good colour, but it hasn't got a lot of tone. But now you can see that it's starting to take some gasps. We've got a good amount of tone there. You what, sorry?
You look absolutely horrified.
Are you?
I just called her a machine.
A what?
She's a machine.
A machine, yeah, she is very much so. Yes, hon? Yes, yeah, so for third stage management, a lot of midwives will use a drug called syntometrin or syntocinon, which is a synthetic oxytocin, which is a drug known as a uterotonic. similar to the same group as misoprostol, but they will use syntometrin as a way of actively medically managing the third stage. Most home births and most women who have low risk pregnancies are advised to have a physiological third stage, which is what we manage under JR Calc. So the uterotonic syntometrin, what it does is it causes a massive reaction of a contracting uterus. And by doing that, it causes the release of the placenta from the uterine wall. And it means that a midwife then can very quickly do a bit of fundal and a bit of uterine stabilization and pull the placenta out using what's known as controlled cord traction. Side effects of syntometrin are quite extensive, but they fail to tell women that a lot of the time. They just go, oh, it's just a little injection for your placenta. It'll stop you bleeding and make it come out quicker. So a physiological third stage can take up to an hour, whereas with an active management of a third stage takes about 10 minutes. So it's a much quicker process. It does cause a little bit less bleeding, and there is an increased risk of postpartum hemorrhage with physiological third stage. However, if it's done in a correct grouping of people, so women that are low risk and don't have risks of bleeding, there's no statistical difference in their bleeding at all. So most women are given the option, but they're given the option, or do you want it nice and quick and I'll pull it out, or do you want to wait an hour for it to come out? But most of our placentas that are done pre-hospital, you find that they come out within 20 minutes anyway. So the current JR Calc guidelines state that if your placenta is not expelled by 20 minutes, then you should start making your way to hospital. If she's hemodynamically unstable, or you've got evidence of postpartum hemorrhage, so you've got blood loss over 500 mils, that would be when you would want to cannulate and administer your misoprostol, and you'd be taking them separately, blue lights, to get her in for a postpartum hemorrhage treatment. So in order to effectively get a placenta out, you ideally need to do a few things, okay? Firstly, you want to make sure that you do not clamp and cut the cord, okay? So do not clamp and cut the cord, because if you clamp and cut the cord, you leave a large blood volume within the placenta. And by leaving that large blood volume within the placenta, one, you're stopping the baby from getting its circulating blood volume back, which is really, really important, because the fetus can lose up to a third of its circulating blood volume if you clamp and cut the cord before about 5 minutes, really, it's ideally, but it's about 85% is transfused in the first 2 minutes. So that's why we say wait a minimum of 60 seconds before we even think about clamping and cutting, okay? So that is generally when you do your first initial newborn assessment anyway. But by allowing the cord to stop pulsating, sends the correct physiological symptoms to the brain, signals to the brain to allow the placenta to be passed. So it tells the brain that it's empty, it's not being used anymore. So the baby's had all of that blood back. Get her into a position where she's upright to allow gravity to take effect, because again, that will help, because last time something put pressure on the pelvic floor, we had that Ferguson's reflex to get those expulsive contractions to expel it out. That will do exactly the same thing. Empty her bladder. Now, it's not obviously going to be possible in a lot of occasions to take her to the toilet, okay? And a lot of us, in our pre-hospital scope, don't have the ability to catheterize. But if we can get her to empty her bladder, that can really, really help in postpartum hemorrhage management, but also in just getting a placenta out. If she's got a full bladder, there's one really interesting telltale sign that you will notice, and that's when you palpate her fundus to make sure that her uterus is nice and well contracted post-birth. If her fundus is deviated to the side, that's a sign you've got a full bladder. So your fundus should feel like hard and solid, like a cricket ball, and be just about the level of the umbilicus. If it's over to the side, you've got a full bladder. So if you can get her to pass urine, just give her an inco sheet or a urine cup, anything, and just say, you know, I'll give you some privacy, I'll turn my back, or I'll leave one colleague in the room and I'll leave the room. Is there any chance you can just try and have a pee? If she's in the bathroom, you can move her onto the toilet, but I
don't advocate moving her to the toilet, ideally, if you can help it. One, your placenta's had a habit of going down the toilet. And secondly, if she is hemodynamically unstable, she might pass out on the toilet as well, which again is something that you don't want to happen. Oxytocin. There's a couple of very, very easy ways you can maximise her natural oxytocin. Skin to skin with the baby. So get her skin to skin with the baby. That was a really, really simple, easy way that you can increase her natural oxytocin. Get her to latch the baby on to breastfeed. If she doesn't want to breastfeed, we're not going to force her. You know, it's nothing that we can, you know, we're not going to be enforcing breastfeeding on women. But actually, just by latching on, even for that one feed, can help get that placenta out. And it's a really, really useful tool. Nipple stimulation is one of the things that gets you not only into labour, but it can help stop your postpartum hemorrhages afterwards. But nipple stimulation and pre-hospital care doesn't really go together. So, you know, we'll leave that one there and we'll move on. There is also the added bonus that the skin-to-skin contact with the baby, which, if you look at the letter of the NICE guidelines, etc., they should have 1 hour of uninterrupted skin-to-skin post-birth. I'd love to be on the receiving end of control if someone tried to pull that one. But anyway, we'll leave that one there. But that actually, having that, you know, even if it is just 20 minutes of skin-to-skin with their baby afterwards, is so important for that mother and baby. Because let's face it, if they've had a baby with us present, it's going to have been a traumatic birth. It's going to be a birth they were not expecting to happen, because you wouldn't call an ambulance to a birth, you know, if it was expected, would you? Unless, unfortunately, like your home birth case, and we've rocked up because they're expecting a home birth, etc. So it's going to be a traumatic birth regardless. So having that uninterrupted skin-to-skin time and having that bonding moment with that baby is proven to reduce rates of postnatal depression and help bonding with babies, okay? So if you can get that time of that skin-to-skin, it's really, really important. There's also lots of stuff about microbiomes and all that stuff, which is a lot more stuff to go into. But for us, helping with that bonding process is really, really important. The other thing that you must not do is pull on the cord, okay? Really, really, really important. Now, you will see midwives do it in that controlled manner in an active third stage management, but not all placentas are built the same, okay? So generally what a placenta should look like is this. So you should about the size of a dinner plate, okay? And it should have the cord going straight into the middle of the placenta. But some placentas are not built like that. So you can get placentas where the cords go into the membranes rather than into the placenta. So if you were to pull on that, you can technically pull the cord and membranes off the placenta and leave the placenta behind, which puts you at increased risk of postpartum hemorrhage. And the other thing is, if you were to pull on that and the placenta was still attached to the wall of the uterus, or she had some a weird abnormality of a placenta where the placenta was actually physically stuck to the wall of the uterus, you can pull a uterus inside out. So there's a condition known as uterine inversion, which happens where the uterus is pulled through the cervix, which causes a very nice hypertensive bradycardic reaction, and they very quickly go into cardiac arrest. Hence why we say, do not pull on the cords. When the placenta actually separates off the wall of the uterus, okay, you will get a gush of bleeding, okay? There's going to be around about 200 to 300 mils of blood that comes away in a normal third stage. Now, if you see a woman who's just given birth put out a real big gush of 300 mils, what's everyone's instant reaction? Oh my God, quick, let me get a big, massive orange cannula in the back of her hand and fill her full of devil's fluid. Yeah? Please don't. Please, please don't. It is normal to lose up to 500 mils of blood in birth, okay? The body and the physiological processes of pregnancy give a woman that enhanced blood volume because it's preparing them to lose it during the birthing process. So at the point of birth, they can lose up to 500 mils and still be perfectly hemodynamically stable, okay? So do not panic if you see a gush of blood in the third stage, followed by the cord lengthening, okay? And then all of a sudden she's got an urge to push. That's just your placenta separating, okay? So the easiest way then at that point to stop that bleeding is to tell her to get upright, squat down and push, because then your placenta will plop out, okay? When the placenta does plop out, make sure that you have a quick look at it, okay? It's not always nice if you've not had your dinner, I know, or sometimes it's not nice when you have had your dinner. But what you're looking for is you're looking to feel the texture of it. You're looking to feel, you know, does it feel gritty? You know, does it feel calcified in any way? And also, is it all there, or does it look like there are some chunks left behind? If it looks like there's some chunks left behind, you know, have another good feel of her uterus and make sure it's contracted, because chances are if there's chunks left behind, she's going to continue to bleed. And then you need to go into your postpartum hemorrhage guideline. Okay. Now, the guideline is changing for PPH at the moment. You'll be pleased to know something else that's changing. It means that very soon there will be a different process followed, because I think the algorithm for PPH is really confusing at the moment. We've got a couple more minutes before we finish. Then we've got yes.
Is TXA in the JRCOUT guideline?
Yes, it is. But it's right at the end of the PPH guideline, and it's only to be administered en route. So we wouldn't get to administer TXA unless she's on her way to hospital and you've got over a 15-minute run time. So it is in the guideline, but it would only be at a very last resort. So it's right at the end. I always do PPH right at the very end. So, so you would only administer it en route.
Will that be changing, do you think?
No, because the most important thing is to rub up your uterus, get your myzo in and get her gone. We don't want to delay time on scene to give that. If we can give it quicker, then yeah, potentially, but it's more important that we get that uterine atony addressed rather than the TXA. The TXA is not going to stop the PPH. It will obviously help protect later on, but it's as long as it's administered within 3 hours, we're safe. And if they're hanging around on scene for 3 hours, then there's something very drastically wrong. Yeah. I'm sorry, I've gone way over. I'm notorious for this. I do apologise. I'll be quiet now. Thank you.
That's it for this Care Team Sessions podcast. You'll find information on how to get your CPD certificate in the podcast description. If you've enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss any future episodes. You can also follow us on social media at WM Care Team. Thanks for listening.